We'll be taking a look at your physical health next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Lori Tyne-Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, who is an associate professor in the UW Medical School, and they come by once a month, as a matter of fact, isn't it? Yeah, well, once a month. Been that way for a long time.
For a really long time.
We're in double digits. We're probably 13, 14 years, I think.
Although we don't look that old.
No, we don't. Well, you both are in pretty good health, or pretty good shape.
Well, yeah. You know, you feel the weather, though. You know, those changes in the barometric pressure. I have many people who come in and tell me they know that there's a storm coming tomorrow because they hurt today. And it seems as though that it's worse when the barometric pressure fluctuates up and down. And so when you get, they said the fall actually tends to be worse because there's a lot of changes in the barometric pressure, and that's what bothers them. But for those people who thought it was an old wives' tale that, you know, you could feel when the weather changed, it's true.
Yeah, a lot of those old wives' tales are true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not tales.
Yeah. They're not tales.
they're true tales. Let's put it that way.
Exactly, exactly. But that Farmer's Almanac one, about 150 inches of snow this year, I'm hoping that one's wrong.
Nah, John Martin, our meteorologist, says no way. He does not believe in the Farmer's Almanac.
Oh, bless his heart. Oh,
do not pay any attention to it.
That's the best news I've heard today.
I'll believe him today.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, we've got every line filled, and Nancy in Grafton's been patiently waiting, so let's go to Nancy. Hi, Nancy. Thanks for calling.
Good morning.
Morning.
Sun was shining here a little bit ago.
Well,
anyway.
Good for you.
I don't know what's going on here, but I've got pain in the groin area. I was thinking it was around the femoral artery, and then I'm thinking, well, maybe it's the sciatic nerve, and boy, I tell you, it hurts. And what can I do about that, or what should I do about it?
So, Nancy, when you say groin, are you talking about in the front of your hip?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, on the right side.
And how long have you had this?
Oh, just the last maybe 2-3 days, but it hurts.
All right. Any slips or falls?
No,
or
nothing.
Okay. And did you ever have this before?
Nope.
Okay. And does the pain move down into your leg?
In the inner side, yes.
Okay, below the knee?
Not that far.
Okay, all right. Well, will you describe the location of the symptoms? It's not your sciatic nerve. Sciatic nerve will give you pain in the buttock and on the back of your leg. You mentioned the femoral artery. There's a femoral nerve in the groin area that extends down the thigh, the front and inside of the thigh. Does it hurt when you walk on it? Does it hurt more when you lie down? Is there a pattern?
Just standing and downstairs, going up the stairs, it didn't seem to bother so much, but down.
Okay. Down it bothers. Okay.
Okay. All right. Well, the hip joint is right in that area. You described the artery kind of in the groin area. The hip joint is deep in that area. There are also a lot of muscles that attach up to that area as well. You know, if there had been a slip or a fall, that's a common complaint to people who injure the bone, the thigh bone up at that hip joint area.
It's not one of those deals where you sleep wrong and in bed and wake up with something.
No, typically not.
No, but sometimes you do an unusual activity or maybe haven't thought about it and you overuse the muscles in that area. Or if you do excessive walking or you're walking on uneven surfaces, you may not notice that you pull something.
None of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what I would do is I would monitor over the next few days. If it's not getting any better or it seems to be getting worse, I would go see your physician and have examined that hip area. Most little twinges and catches that we get, usually within 2, 3, 4, 5 days, you start feeling better. And so a few days from now, if you can tolerate more time on your feet and going downstairs, no longer a problem, I wouldn't worry about it. But if it's not gone in a few days, I would give your physician a phone call.
No? I don't think it has anything to do with the femoral artery.
Well, why do you ask that?
Because I have a little problem with a valve and heart.
Oh.
And I just...
No?
I think it probably is more of a nerve, like you say.
All right. Well, like I said, there's an artery there. Typically, if you have an arterial problem, you'll get pain with walking, and the more walking you do, and going upstairs oftentimes will cause pain as well. So, you know, that structure's in the area. But, you know, if that's a concern you have, there's no reason why you shouldn't call your physician and even just talk to him on the phone.
Sure. Why not? Give him a call, or him or her a call. And good luck. Thanks very much for calling, Nancy. Appreciate it. Chuck in Spring Grove, your turn. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm wondering if you'd give me some advice and opinion. I'm living a nightmare of pain with a 10-year-old back injury from a motor vehicle accident. It's all on the right-hand side of my spine. I was twisted in the seat with the seat belt and shoulder belt on when I was rear-ended by a semi. I was a passenger. To the right of T10, 9, 10, and 11, and to the right of maybe 5 and 6 in that area, I have terrible pain, and it comes on extremely fast, and I've had lots of different types of therapy, and I'm wondering, and treatments, the MRIs, repeated MRIs, and neurosurgeons reading them have shown nothing in the MRIs and or x-rays, and I'm considering prolotherapy, and because if I wiggle, stretch, roll, I'll get snaps, you know, similar to chiropractic-type noises out of them, sometimes loud, sometimes soft, and I'll get temporary relief. And I've had facet injections, trigger point injections, several acupuncture, chiropractic, myofascial massage release, epidural steroid injections. It's really a nightmare of pain, and I'm wondering what you think about this prolotherapy. I'm thinking that the soft tissues are stretched and not holding things in place, because when I do get these snaps, I get almost instant relief for a short period of time.
Hmm. Well, let's see what our experts have to say here. Start with Bill.
Sure. Prolotherapy, they're injections, and they inject fluid and irritant into different body tissues with the hope of causing some scarring to allow tissue to tighten up, basically. And so if you have an area that is lax or loose, it's been used for numbers of years, most often way back when with sacroiliac joint problems, but now they're simply using it in almost all body parts if they feel like hypermobility or too much motion is the underlying cause or problem. I'm not sure how much research there is behind it in most of these areas outside of sacroiliac joint.
Well, in terms of joints, the sacroiliac joint is the big one, but they're starting to use it in other connective tissues, for example, around the elbow for chronic tendinosis around the elbow, and showing that areas, for example, in a tendon that have areas of increased vascularity that should not have such vascularity, that the prolotherapy helps to decrease that and cause that scarring that you discussed. So I think it sounds to me, in Chuck's case, it would be a reasonable alternative. It sounds like he has done everything else.
Yeah, and sounds like it.
And given the mechanism of his injury and the symptoms he describes, the treatment would fit with the possible cause of his problems, that, you know, the symptoms and the theory fit together. So it seems to me like it'd be a reasonable thing to try.
Mm-hmm. Any other suggestions on other types of therapy?
It sounds like you've done it all.
It is. You've run the gamut. I can't think of a lot of other things that the world has to offer.
Yeah. Chuck, the hope with the prolotherapy, if it helps you symptomatically, I mean, ultimately, people who are in better condition have fewer problems with back pain. And so if the prolotherapy gives you enough relief that would open up doors for you for exercise and activity that's guided, and someone's kind of guiding you down the path, probably gives you your best chance in the long run to get some semi-permanent relief.
So if that gives him relief, then Chuck goes ahead and then is able to exercise or work
right.
with a therapist or whatever, then that would help it yep. down the road.
Exactly. Yeah. Sometimes the underlying instability is so great that they just can't exercise with
yeah.
it. So if they get some stability, then the exercises can be effective.
Good luck. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Chuck. Jerry and Abrams? On to you. Hi, Jerry. Thank you for calling.
Hi, guys. Great show.
Thank you.
Last time I talked to you guys was 3 years ago, and I was having shoulder problems, and I took your advice and had medical attention, and it was a full rotator cuff tear, and I got that all fixed up, and it's brand new again.
Excellent. Good for you.
But anyhow, you know, over the 50 mark now, and I've been having a lot of tendonitis in both elbows.
Mm-hmm.
I actually did a lot of rock work this summer, placing fieldstone and such. Other than quitting working altogether, is there any way to prevent the tendonitis and elbows, or a better way to get rid of it than medications?
So you still have it now?
Yeah.
Okay, and it hurts when you grip and when you do lifting?
Right, right.
Okay.
And then is this tender to the touch?
Yep, on the outside
like
of your elbow.
Outside,
yep.
The right both outside.
Yep, yep, yep. That'd be classic. Well, you know, as we just got done talking about with Chuck, the problem is, and actually in, and I'll say our age group, the problem isn't usually a tendonitis. Itis implies an active inflammation. It's usually a tendinosis, which is a degenerative tendon. So it kind of casts a different light on the whole thing in that you're dealing with the tendon that is no longer as strong or as capable of healing itself or recovering from an insult as it was when it was younger. So you're dealing with a chronic problem. So what we need to do now is bring the stress load down to a point that the current state of the tendon can handle. One way to do that is to use a wrist splint. So you can get these at a local drugstore. There's an opening. It slips over your thumb. Your fingers are all free, but it stabilizes your wrist and gives support to it, because actually the tennis elbow comes from the origin of the muscles that work your wrist and hand. So that's why we focus on your wrist. So that's one thing you can do. The next thing is trying to minimize your grip or to work with a more open grip. So if you're doing a lot of work, if you can lift without doing a lot of gripping at the same time, lifting and gripping together is problematic. So if you can structure your work and how you move to minimize that combination, that would help. And then thirdly, you can get what's called a tennis elbow strap, and that goes up just below your elbow, and that takes some of the pressure right off that spot where there's so much pressure and tension, and that helps too. So then once you get the forces under control by modifying your work, decreasing the stuff at your wrist and using the elbow strap, then you begin working on strengthening to strengthen the remaining portion of that tendon. And that's usually done through gripping and wrist exercises, not surprisingly. So when someone can help guide you through that, a physical therapist could help guide you through that process. Mm-hmm. For people who are having really a lot of difficulty, prolotherapy is an option.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's very helpful. So I'll get some of those straps and give that a try and build those tendons back up again.
All right. That's it.
Let us know how you do.
Good luck, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Rose in Menominee Falls is next. Hi, Rose.
Hello there. I've developed a problem with my knee. It's on the inside of the knee. It doesn't feel like it's in the joint. Somebody said there was a bursa there, and I've had bursitis problems in other areas, but I don't know if that's what it is or...
Does it look swollen to you? Do you?
No.
No? Okay. Does it hurt to touch on that spot?
No.
No? Okay. Yeah. What makes it hurt?
Sometimes it just hurts all by itself if I'm just sitting.
Okay.
It definitely hurts when I walk.
Okay. That sounds more like it's coming from your joint. If it was the bursa, and that person is right, there is at least one, but there's probably several bursa on the inside of your knee. But they're fairly superficial. And if you have a bursitis, usually when you touch that area, it hurts to touch it kind of like a bruise. And sometimes if there's enough fluid in the bursa, it can actually look swollen there on the inside of your knee. But it should not bother you at rest. So the things that bother you at rest are typically arthritic types of problems,
mm-hmm.
and the inside of your knee joint is probably the number one spot that develops some of those degenerative changes, and it also tends to hurt if you're up on it a lot. So what I'd suggest is seeing a physical therapist to have a good examination, taking a look at the strength in your legs, taking a look at your joint to look at its range of motion to see if they can see any swelling in there or find a tender spot. Sometimes it's tender along your joint line. And then giving you some exercises to help keep your leg strong. And that can sort of minimize the progression of that problem.
Hmm.
Exercising in a pool is good. But there are a number of things you can do
Would heat or ice?
Exactly. Some ice at this point would be useful.
Okay.
Especially the times when it's bothering you.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for calling. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests today. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Take some more calls. If you have a question, maybe an ache of pain that you're trying to deal with, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And we have an email from Liz in Dodgeville who says, I was told that I have a tight iliotibial band. I also suffer from an almost constant dull pain on the front of my thigh near my groin. Is this pain related to the iliotibial problem, and what can I do to fix both of these problems?
Well, the iliotibial band, or the IT band, is a pretty famous structure. Lots of people have problems with it, and it's been written up quite a bit. It attaches up high in front of the pelvis, in front of the hip bone, and extends down the outside of the thigh and crosses the knee. And there are people, it can get tight. It's not unusual to be tight. And it can get irritated at different points between the attachment sites. Classically, this doesn't typically cause groin pain, but it certainly could cause pain in that area. If this has been going on long enough and it throws off how people walk and run, then you can have involvement of other structures at the hip.
Oh,
so the IT
sure.
band could have been the initial cause, and now there's some secondary issues going on. But you know, if it starts including the groin, this would be a good time to get it checked out if she has not been, to be examined and see if they can sort out what's the primary issue for her.
All right, great, very good. Let's go to, Ketchin in La Crosse. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. I've been a runner for quite a while. I'm 28 years old, and I've been running since middle school. And over the past couple of years, I've slowed down on running, just haven't run as much. Still coach a lot, but due to graduate school and starting a teaching career, I just haven't ran as much. Over the past couple of years, when I do run or when I'm coaching, I have some pretty bad Achilles pain, and it's extremely sensitive to the touch. If I squeeze it on either side, it's kind of that pain that sends you through the roof. And over the past 3 months, I've been playing this in a night volleyball league, and every night it feels like I just kind of re-aggravate it or just inflame it again each night, and it just both sides, both Achilles. A friend of mine suggested, and I have no idea where they heard it, but they said that I should put a lift in my shoe, in one of my shoes or in both shoes, just some kind of a lift, a heel lift to maybe elevate or relieve the pressure from it. Being thrifty, I just cut off the heels from a couple different insoles on some shoes I was throwing away, and I put those in there. And it helped for a brief period of time, but both Achilles are just extremely sensitive to the touch. And I was just curious if you had any suggestions or what I could do to solve that problem.
Oh, you made such an excellent point. I love how you cut up your old shoes. That was great. But that's exactly one of the things we do as a short-term relief, and that is we do put a heel lift in your shoe to take some of the pressure, the constant pressure off the tendon. But that has to be accompanied by a rehabilitation program to lengthen the tendon. Tendons need length and they need strength. So the shortening is only to take some of the pressure off of it temporarily. So what you need is a good rehabilitation program. The Achilles tendonitis and patellar tendonitis are notorious for being difficult to heal because you're always using them. I mean, every time you're up, every step you take, you're using both your Achilles and your patellar tendon. So they are difficult to heal. So I usually recommend some guidance from a physical therapist on these. But I can give you the general parameters of this. One, you need to stretch the tendon. It needs to be lengthened. You need to stretch in such a manner that you feel a gentle stretching sensation and not excruciating pain. If you do, you're overstretching it and you're going to inflame it even more. So stretching frequently throughout the day, gently, as long as you can tolerate. Your strengthening program should be what we call eccentric based, and that is focusing on the lengthening contractions. We have discovered that chronic tendonitis, sometimes tendonitis, but tendinosis also, can be associated with hypervascularity, vascular supply where it's not supposed to be there. And actually performing the eccentrics sort of kills off that vascularity that's not supposed to be there. So there's a lot of strong research support for an eccentric program. So typically what you do if you have tendonitis in one of your ankles is you stand over the edge of a step, you toe raise up with both feet, and then you lower yourself down with just the injured side so that you're getting the negative on the injured side. When you have both sides, then you have to alternate or do, you know, five with one and five with the other or whatever. But you need a strong eccentric-based program.
Okay.
All right.
I would get in and see somebody, and it really requires some direction.
Good luck, Keechan. Thank you very much for calling. And we'll try Pat in Green Bay next. Pat, hello to you.
Hi. I have a right sciatic problem, and I had an MRI which showed some multilevel spondylosis and an increase in spondylolisthesis, L4, 5, and L5S1. It says progression of spondylosis results in some increase in moderate right foraminal compromise at the L4 and 5. What does that mean?
You did so well.
You did. I was
you
impressed
did a great
there,
job.
Pat. Yeah, you got it down. Well, spondy means spine. As kind of the root word here, spondylosis means degeneration.
Okay.
And it's the areas that you mentioned, the L4, 5, L5S1, are the most common areas for degeneration to set up shop. And it can be related to the discs or it can be related and or to the facet joints. We have two small facet joints behind the disc at every vertebra. The spondylolisthesis, when you add listhesis, that means a slip. So one vertebra has slid forward a little bit on the next vertebra. And the foraminal stenosis or narrowing, that can happen with degeneration. When with disc degeneration, the disc height decreases, where actually we lose some height.
Yeah.
And that can narrow the windows that the nerves exit the spine through. And then if you add a little slip on top of that, listhesis on top of that, again, it just the nerves don't have as much room as they leave the spine.
What is the most common treatment for that? I've had an evaluation by a physiatrist, and he recommended the epidural injections, but... And I said, well, what if they don't work? And he said, well, then you'd need a spinal fusion. I thought, before I go ahead with that, I need a second opinion.
Yeah. Well, some people, but it's a minority. Some people do need surgical intervention to make more space for those nerves. An epidural injection, a steroid injection, if the sciatic pain is horrible, excruciating, and you're not getting any relief from it, sometimes injections are needed to calm things down enough so you can start a rehabilitation program. But physical therapy also can be very successful. Many times we work in the pool with folks who have this condition. The unweighting nature of the water allows people to be more physically active. There's times we use some traction early on to help decrease the intensity of the sciatica. But hip flexibility and spinal strength is also critical, both short-term and long-term. Have you seen a physical therapist for this?
No. I started, my internist referred me to the physiatrist. Well, then he said, you know, I think you have a hip and a back problem. And so I had hip x-rays, and it shows, what is pseudo-articulation? It says you have asymmetric, may have pseudo-articulation of the left L, but all the... There's more pathology on the left, but I have the pain on the right, and it's gotten so at night I have to intermittently take Vicodin to sleep.
Yeah.
Well, a couple things. The symptoms don't always match up with what we see on an X-ray or MRI. There's not always a good correlation between them. Degeneration can cause night pain bad enough to wake people up. So that's also not that unusual. But if you haven't seen a physical therapist for this, unless you're having progressive numbness and weakness, particularly below the knee, or you're having troubles going to the bathroom, hard time starting urine flow, you're losing urine, or with defecation, then surgery is not an urgent It's not an urgent recommendation.
Okay.
And so if you're not having any issues with there, what I recommend is see a physical therapist, and they'll be able to sort out also what's coming from your back versus your hip. and start you on a good program.
And good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we'll take some more calls. We have an email, though, from Joe in Lake Geneva. He's 52, not overweight, does lots of walking. 3 months ago, he strained a tendon on the inside of his left knee, went to a GP doctor. He pushed against his leg in different ways, and based on when it hurt, diagnosed the tendon strain. The knee has had a good deal of swelling. I can hardly even kneel down. Swelling in back feels like it will explode like a balloon, swelling above the knee in front as well.
Wow.
Yeah, had prednisone for 10 days to reduce inflammation. Didn't seem to do any good, but as he was stepping down his prednisone intake, the pain and stiffness got worse. Began rubbing the knee, lower thigh, and calf with Tiger Balm. Reduced the swelling. Doctor said this indicated it was not internal and I should keep the Tiger Balm at least 4 times a day. Also asked me to do stretching of my calf. This really stretches the 2x4 under my left foot and leaning forward. This really stretches the calf. I can really feel it. I also take 4 ibuprofen 3 or 4 times a day for the comfort. The knee is swollen, calf and ankle as well. Tiger Balm helps, but it wears off. When it wears off, the swelling gets worse. Muscle is very tight and tender to the touch. Feels like a scab ripping when I stretch it.
Wow.
I can walk pretty well with little pain, but I can't run 2 steps without bad pain in the knee and joint inner tendon. Kneeling and squatting with my left leg is very painful.
Back up, Larry. Was there an injury? He said he just strained.
I strained a tendon on the inside of my left knee.
That doesn't sound remotely like a tendon strain to me. Tendon strains don't cause swelling. You don't get swelling down in your calf. You don't get that terrible burning, ripping sensation. None of the symptoms fit with that diagnosis. So I'd get a second opinion. If he's been to a family practice physician, I'd go to an orthopedic physician next. Okay. I'd do that before I went anyplace else. And those symptoms sound intense and far exceed what I would expect from
something inflammatory, which can be a whole host of things, but things that a physician needs to treat aggressively to protect the joint and the surrounding structures.
Right. Yeah.
All right, on to Gene in Ashland then. Gene, hello to you.
Hello. I heard a new therapy. I'm not sure where I heard it, but it was a news item. Called ozone therapy, non-invasive. That means I think it was administered by mild air pressure at the site of a ruptured or herniated disc in the spine. And the disc is said to shrink, return to its position, and heal up. Have you heard of this?
I've never heard of ozone therapy. There was a procedure that is not done nearly as much anymore, IDET. Where they go in with basically a hot wire and cauterize, create scarring in the back portion of the disc, but that has nothing to do with air pressure.
No, I've not heard of anything called about ozone therapy or.
And I've never heard anything about any kind of air-related pressure technique that would do anything to a disc.
Well, this would be ozone that supposedly is somewhat absorbed. Through the air pressure, and there's it's not invasive. It doesn't penetrate the skin. I mean, it doesn't. May be absorbed, but there's no penetration of the skin by any mechanical means, and there's no side effect.
Gene, where did you hear about this?
I can't remember what program I heard. It was supposedly experimental, and this was being very pleased with the results.
Okay.
So just a quick look online at what I'm coming up with is it may kill infectious disease bacteria. I see that but I'm not seeing anything relating to what Gene.
I'm sorry, we can't shed any more light on that.
Do you have any information on the use of bromelain or malic acid?
For back pain.
Yes, for the spine.
No, I don't have any.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Sorry, Gene.
Sorry, we can't help you there. We have Joan who emailed us. She has one toe starting to cross the other toe. Is that called hammer toe, and what can I do Or can I do any exercises to stop one toe from crossing over another?
Well, a hammer toe is, it doesn't necessarily cross over one toe, but it's when your toe curls and bends in an unusual way, so it looks like a hammer, and you usually get a callus on the top knuckle of that toe. And it usually has to do with a biomechanical problem at your foot. When your toes really start to get bad, then they can start to cross over one another where they get movement not only sort of in the up and down flexion extension range, but they start getting excessive movement in the side-to-side plane. And it's usually best corrected with some sort of orthotic device. So there are different things you can use to straighten your toes, little, you know, braces or splints you can put to keep your toes from crossing one another. But the big issue is looking at your underlying foot mechanics and seeing if there's an orthotic or an arch support that can help correct some of the mechanics at your foot so that the toes are not mechanically responding that way. So I would start with someone who specializes in the foot, a podiatrist or some other person who specializes in foot mechanics.
And Karen wonders in an email, what are the best arches to wear for someone with chronic plantar fasciitis? I have trouble wearing any shoes other than tennis shoes because of needing to put arches in my shoes.
Oh, you know, that is such an individual question. As someone myself, who has had plantar fasciitis on and off for many years, I've gone through the gamut of when it's worse, at its worst, I can't wear anything in my shoe because it hurts, to when it's fine, I wear a rigid, hard orthotic in my shoe. And then I have all kinds of variations in between, depending upon the time of year. And so, and she's probably laughing at me because she probably has a closet full of arch supports as well. So, you know, what I recommend for people is they start off with a simple over-the-counter arch support. They can get it at a drugstore that's not too expensive so that they can see if that works for them and what feels good and what characteristics of that feel good. You know, the covering, what kind of surface it has, how rigid it is, how long it is, how flexible it is. And then if they find sort of the characteristics of that arch support that work for them, they can get a higher quality one that lasts a little bit longer. I know there are sporting goods stores that sell kind of an intermediate range orthotic, like, you know, REI and some of the other sporting goods stores carry arch supports that are in the $25 to $50 range. So you can go step up to that level. Or you can go to a custom, but I wouldn't start there because you really need to figure out what are the characteristics that work for you. I wouldn't use just an arch support, though. In an acute phase or when it's really bad, I would also use a night splint. Those can be very helpful in relieving your symptoms, as well as stretching exercises for your arch and your calf muscles. It'd be really important aspects of that.
All right. On to Sherry in West Bend. Hi, Sherry.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm having a problem with the low back, and it sounds pretty similar to the other caller who was having a problem. I had a double laminectomy over a year ago of L5 and S1, I believe it was, or maybe 4 and 5. I'm now having a lot of pain again and numbness in the left leg. It kind of goes around down the butt cheeks, into the feet, the front of the feet. I had a bone scan a week ago, so I'm going to get those results tomorrow. I'm seeing the spinal surgeon, neurosurgeon again. And I'm just wondering if the possibility of a fusion is there or if I'm just having the stenosis again. What do you guys think?
Well, when you have a laminectomy done, basically that procedure, it removes some bone from the back of your spine to give more space for the nerves, and it's primarily designed to relieve leg symptoms, you know, pain, bad pain, numbness, and potentially some weakness. But it doesn't leave the anatomy normal in that low lumbar area, so there could also be some degenerative changes potentially. That can result in the symptoms that you describe, both back pain as well as return of some leg symptoms. Now, a fusion will the surgeon will fuse the vertebra together, so it can no longer move, and they kind of boost things up so there's space for nerves, and then they fuse the bones together. And sometimes, although that's kind of again, most people don't need a fusion to get to get relief from the symptoms that you described. The big thing when you talk to the surgeon or the neurosurgeon would be related to the numbness and how quickly has it come on and how significant is the sensory loss. Do you have any weakness in terms of whether they start talking surgery with you or not? Sometimes after a laminectomy, some scarring can occur around nerves as they exit the back, and they can be very gently stretched out and mobilized, which can help relieve lots of leg symptoms.
Okay.
Have you seen a physical therapist in the last few months?
I did after the surgery, but not recently again, no.
Yeah. That would certainly be something to consider.
Okay.
The things that they give somebody immediately post-operative are really designed to kind of get you through those first few months of recovery. They're really not designed for long-term recovery and prevention. But it sounds like you need a program to get you out of trouble here and then work on some longer-term changes. Mm-hmm. So I would consider going to see a physical therapist as well and see if they can help you both short-term and long-term.
All right.
I've already had the 3 injections, and they didn't do any good. So.
Okay. Yep. All right. Well,
alrighty.
Then they may be talking to you again about surgery again. But again, unless you're having bowel and bladder problems, unless the numbness or weakness is progressive, you know, the pain is bad enough, but conservative care, you want to try all approaches before you consider having another procedure done.
Could there be spinal instability?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. And so what you need then is you need really good hip flexibility and really good trunk strength, but done in ways that don't cause the pain, increase in the pain you're having.
Mm-hmm. All righty.
Good luck, Sherry.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. And on to Tawny in Madison. Hi, Tawny.
Hi. Mine isn't so severe, but I hit my funny bone like 3 weeks ago, and I haven't had the...
You slipped and fell?
I can't pick up anything without, you know, I don't have any feeling in my hand.
Well, now you slipped and fell, Tawny, or what?
I was moving some furniture around, and then I hit my funny bone, and it was very sore, but then 3 weeks later, I don't have any feeling in my hand.
In your entire hand or just part of your hand?
I can move my thumb, but I can't move the rest of the digits.
You can't move them?
I can't feel them.
Oh, you can't feel them. Can you move them?
I can kind of move them, yeah, but I don't, you know, like to touch.
Okay.
They don't feel anything. I can't touch what it doesn't.
Okay.
How to explain
okay.
It.
Can you move your elbow?
Yeah, I can.
Okay. You need to see your physician for this. If it's been 3 weeks and you can't feel your hand and it's not moving, then you caused some nerve damage that needs to be addressed sooner rather than later.
Okay.
Your funny bone, I mean, it's a nerve that passes through the back of your elbow, is fairly superficial. And as you know, most people, when they hit their funny bone, you get that transient zing from hitting
and
that
never
nerve.
I've had it before, but it never has, you know, happened before like this.
Yeah.
You know, usually my hand is fine, but I don't feel any.
Yeah. No, you did something this time. And people have different anatomical configurations of that nerve, and sometimes it's more superficial. Sometimes it runs in a little bit different course, and sometimes it can, if you caused, for example, if you hit that and you cause some swelling in the area and you have an anatomical variation where it dives through a muscle or some fascia, you could be having a nerve compression system, an ongoing compression problem that could lead to long-term damage of that nerve. So it really needs to be addressed. If it needs to be decompressed, it needs to be decompressed now before there's any more nerve damage. So you need to get in and see somebody soon.
Right, as soon as possible. Right away. And good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Lori Tyne-Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests today. Lori, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center. Bill, an associate professor at the UW Medical School, as we talk with you about aches and pains and how to deal with them. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to join in our conversation as we talk with Bill Boisenault, Lori Tyne-Brody, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. org. And let's turn to Dana in Toma next. Dana, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've had some disc trouble for the past 5 years, and after going through physical therapy a couple times and having an epidural shot, my regular MD suggested I try acupuncture. And I did that, and it gave me quite a bit of relief, and I just wanted to get your opinion on the acupuncture side of things and if it's a safe thing to be doing and just what you thought of it.
Yeah, I think acupuncture has been around for a long, long, long time, thousands of years, and so it clearly helps people with certain kinds of conditions, and it is relatively safe. Although anytime the skin is breached, there is some risk. So as long as you go to someone who's licensed, generally it is a very safe procedure. It's similar to some of the other things we've talked about today, whether it's an injection to decrease pain. If acupuncture is successful and gives one relief, it opens the door for a good exercise program looking more long term to help make sure that this back problem doesn't come back again. Sometimes the pain can be so intense early on that it really hampers the development of any kind of a good exercise program. So I understand you've been to a PT a couple times before, but if you're doing quite a bit better, it's maybe time to go back even for one or two visits and let them re-examine you and come up with a program that's designed more long-term. And that includes balance, it includes hip flexibility, as well as trunk stabilization or strengthening to help keep this under control for you.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Peter in La Crosse, on to you now. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Larry. Thanks. Listen, a couple years ago, I was a pretty healthy person, pretty active, and then circumstances led me to have a knee replacement. That failed. I was sent over to Mayo Clinic for another one. That failed. A year later, I went back to have a third one. That failed. They gave me all the parts, so I have a lot of spare parts if you're interested. But the question is, after I went there the last time, they said, well, we think you have a gene for scar tissue, and you heal too quickly, and that's why you don't have flexibility in your knee. That's why it won't flex anymore. And I had never heard that before, and I was wondering why they hadn't told me that earlier, or I never would have done this in the first place. The second question I have is, the knee hurts all the time now, just like it did before, but there's metal and plastic in it. I'm wondering, how in the world can this hurt and ache when it's just artificial parts? And I'm not going back to those doctors anymore. This was a nightmare. I'm pretty crippled up now, and I was fine before.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering, is there a gene for scar tissue, and where does that pain come from now?
Two such good questions. Well, yes, your connective tissue is hereditary. The gene that controls the kind of scar connective tissue you get is hereditary. You get it from your parents, so you have to pick your parents well. Unfortunately, the clinical aspect of that is often in retrospect, and that is after you failed three knee arthroplasties, and they say, oh, now I understand why it is. It's because, you know, now I see that you have this. But they don't go in and they don't do gene studies on this unless you have a clear connective tissue disorder like Ehlers-Danlos syndrome or scurvy is a similar type of connective tissue disease that affects your bones. So the connective tissues are gene related, and you probably have a genetic predisposition to putting down a lot of hypertrophic scar. People have what are called keloids. You may have seen people who have had simple procedures, but they have a big kind of purplish thickened scar. They are genetically geared towards keloid types of scars. So that it is true. Unfortunately, you don't know that ahead of time unless you take a really detailed history about your parents and if you've had other procedures or things and you've put down a lot of scar. Then you would know and you would be alert to that. But if you've been healthy up until then, as you suggested, there would be no history for you to cite. The second question about why does it hurt is because your articular cartilage, which is why they go in and they replace do a knee replacement, because your articular cartilage has worn out. It doesn't have a lot of sensory endings, nerve endings. You don't feel a lot of pain from your articular cartilage. You get pain from your bones that your articular cartilage protects. Well, now they've sort of, you know, lopped off the surface area and part of the bone, but you still have the bone underlying that they've now you know, cemented and pounded on and dug parts back out again three times. So that's bone pain. And that's why it still hurts.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
All right. Thanks. Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Tell you what, Doina in Neenah, Wisconsin, emailed and said recently had arthroscopic knee surgery to repair two meniscus tears due to an old injury. Recovery went well, feel good, no more pain. However, I started to hear these cracking noises when I walk, and it didn't happen before. Any ideas?
Did he say meniscus repairs?
Arthroscopic knee surgery to repair two meniscus tears.
Okay. Well, if they were old meniscus tears,
yeah, they were.
I'm gonna make a guess that they were resected, that they took them out and they didn't repair them. That it's a pretty clear difference from the surgeon's perspective on a repair versus a resection. Mm-hmm. So if you have an acute tear of your meniscus and, you know, it flips into your joint and blocks motion or something, in some way they find out about it right away. Sometimes they'll go in and try to repair it. The rehab is longer following that because it has to be protected very carefully because the meniscus has a very tenuous blood supply and doesn't heal easily. But for the most part, they try to save the meniscus if they can. If these were old tears, chances are they're not repairable. So I'm guessing what happened was they went in and they took out the torn portions and then they sort of shave around and smooth out the edges. So the cracking, you know, you had a surgical procedure. They, you know, blew it up with air and fluid. So you've already had some trauma to the joint with the procedure itself. And then they've changed the mechanics of your joint. They've taken out these areas that were torn. They shaved and all kinds of things to the remaining meniscus. They may or may not have done some work on the adjacent articular cartilage on the ends of the bones that meet the meniscus tear. A lot of times those are scuffed up because you basically have a rough surface, a rough torn meniscus that's rubbing against a smooth joint surface. Sometimes it's scuffed up the joint surface, so they have to do some work there. So it's no longer a perfect, like, ball-bearing joint.
Sure.
So you have snaps, crackles, pops, catches, things like that. So it's not the same joint, and that alerts you to the fact that you have to take care of it, because this is a joint that will now has the potential of deteriorating more quickly.
On to Lori in Eau Claire. Lori, hi to you. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering, I recently, about a month and a half ago, I was sharpening a knife, actually, and I cut my index finger on my left hand at the knuckle. And I cleaned it out right away and kept an eye on it, and everything's fine. It swelled up a lot initially, and then it's healed since, but I can feel... I imagine it's scar tissue on top, but it's still very tender. And I was wondering, is there any, I have pretty good range of motion with it, but I know it's less than what it used to be or that what my other hand is able to do. Do you think that's something that, is going to remain that way, or, is there anything I can do with it to exercise it more?
I would, if you haven't seen a hand therapist, I would see a hand therapist. The mechanics, the biomechanics of the tendons, ligaments, and other soft tissues in your fingers are very precise and fine. And I think you need to have someone examine your finger and make sure that you didn't cut something that was essential, especially if it's your index finger. It's a really important finger for hand function. And just get an examination, get an evaluation, and then that person, I think, would be the best person to direct you as to the right things you should be doing. It's just it's something that's too difficult to take a stab at over the air.
Right.
But you think
a hand specialist instead of, just search out a hand specialist?
Yeah,
your opinion?
There are certified hand therapists.
Okay.
And you should be able to find them in your local health system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. There was an article in the Wisconsin State Journal not too long ago, probably a couple weeks back, on one-sport athletes, and especially young children or teens and so forth. What do you guys think about that? The research seems to suggest that you shouldn't be pushing your child into just one sport.
Yeah, I read that article. It was well written. And And it's an issue. What being involved in one sport year-round, and especially if it's pretty high intensity in terms of they're extremely active throughout the year and lots of practice and meets, or it sets up the risk for repetitive overuse conditions developing. So a lot of the things that, you know, Lori's talking about, the bursitis and tendonitis, potential for stress fracture. You know, in the old days, when I was that age group, we played basketball these months, we played football these months. There was a different sport depending on the season. And so your body's being worked differently. And, you know, there's so much pressure to compete and participate that the body sometimes needs some rest. And sometimes the rest comes from changing activity. So it does carry increased risk for repetitive overuse physically, as well as the emotional burnout as well, which they talk a little about in that article.
Yeah. One of my favorite quotes was from George Sheehan back in Runner's World, I think in the 1970s, and he said, "No horse was ever injured until a rider got on its back." He said, likewise, you know, children shouldn't be pushed, whether it's by their peers or peer pressure or
parents.
The media or parents or coaches or the athletic director, whatever. So kids need to have a variety of activities. They need to experience a lot of things.
Our guests today, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, as we talk about dealing with aches and pains here on the Ideas Network. With us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, as we talk with you about how to deal with some of those physical problems. And again, our lines are all filled, but join us when you get the chance at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And Tina from Wisconsin Dells has been waiting a while, so let's go right to her. Tina, hi.
Hi there. I was in a car accident in the middle of June. I had completely stopped in for a different reason and saw a vehicle coming from behind me that hit me at about 40 miles an hour. Because I saw it coming, I braked very hard and didn't move my vehicle at all. As a result of it, I got obviously whiplash in my neck from my base of my skull down to about top of my shoulder blades. And the bottom 6-8 inches of my lower spine were injured. I had x-rays and MRIs, all of which came back fine. So I saw a physical therapist twice a week from June until the middle of November, at which time she told me the muscles were all still extremely tight. Every muscle was extremely tight and that she was having no effect on anything. So she said we should take a break for it for a while. So I saw a physical medicine doctor who prescribed Relafen for me to deal with the pain that I'm having it. And I still have very sharp stabbing pain, especially when I move my hips, even the slightest amount, it gets severe stabbing pain still in my back. And I'm wondering, how long will it take all those muscles to recover from that kind of a trauma? And is there anything else I should be doing for this?
Yeah, you know, when you're stopped like that and you're 40 miles an hour, I mean, that's fast, and it's not unusual to have both low back and neck pain. The Relafen's a non-steroidal and anti-inflammatory medication, and but it tends not to work that well with really sharp pain as a general rule. It can easily take up to 12 months, if not a little bit longer, for the soft tissue to heal. And usually a sign of progress is when people start feeling stiffer. Sometimes it's better just to back off on some of the stretching and just let the tissue stiffen up over a period of even a couple of months, and then work on gently re-stretching the tissue out. And so, you know, stopping in November, that was a reasonable time to stop. Well, June, was it this year or 2007?
No, this year, this summer.
Okay, and when did the therapy stop?
Second week of November. I'm not exactly sure the date now, but...
Okay.
And I was seeing her twice a week since June.
Well, it certainly was time to stop. And, you know, are you doing anything? Can you do anything aerobically? I mean, whether it's biking or walking or...
It's extremely painful to the point where my hips don't even move anymore. To complicate things, I've got neuropathy in my legs from a previous cancer that I had. So anything that hurts my feet besides. So I can't do a lot of aerobic things.
Right.
The exercises that she had me do were some very basic stretching exercises, and they still give me incredible pain, and they're very slight things, like laying your back with your knees bent and put your knees to the side, and I can move them about 3 inches to each side, and I'm in intense pain at that point.
Okay. Have you been in a pool, a swimming pool, or a warm water pool?
No, I have not tried that.
All right. You know, that might be your best. You need to stay active, and I understand the pain you're having really limits you on a land-based program. But if there's a warm water pool close to you and you can work with a therapist just to keep you moving and work on some core stability, I think you probably get a lot of mileage out of that. And the hope being then that over time you start tolerating a land-based program as well.
Okay, but it could take at least a year, you think?
Well, it can, yes.
Okay.
You know, from what you described, it certainly can. But in the meantime, if you're really, really inactive, you'll lose strength, and it can impact your balance. And you know, it's important that you stay as active as possible. And again, the water may be your best bet.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Good luck.
Is there anything besides the Relifin that I could be taking to help with the pain at all?
Well, again, I would work with your physician on that. The medication by itself is not what you need, but I understand anything to take the edge off it so you can be more comfortable. You know, your neuropathy is complicated a little bit in terms of, you know, what's the underlying cause of the pain. Yeah, I guess it sounds like you have it. I would work with a pain specialist who can guide you with some of the different pain medications that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
But even if the medication works a little bit, the activity would be good for you as long as it's done safely. And, again, I think the water would be a good place to start.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Mary and Nina, we turn to you next. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a 7-year-old son who for about the past 2 years wakes up every few months or so with, I guess, what I'd call growing pains. We had him in, and they took x-rays, and there was nothing showed up on the x-rays. But he still wakes up with, it's always the same leg, his right leg, actually, his right knee, kind of the outside of the knee and the back of the knee. He wakes up in the middle of the night with it hurting, and I give him some ibuprofen and massage it a little bit, and he can fall back to sleep after that. And we've tried to see if it was related to, you know, any extra physical activity that day. It doesn't seem to correlate to any of that. And I'm just wondering, at what stage should we investigate the causes a little bit further?
How often is he waking up with it?
It's every couple of months or so.
Every couple of months. And then how long does it last? He's got this, he wakes up at night and you give him some ibuprofen, and then how long does the pain last?
I'll massage it and he'll go to sleep in probably about a half an hour.
Okay, and then the next day is fine?
Right.
Okay. You know, I'd probably start him on a stretching program, you know, have him doing some stretching for his lower body, his hamstrings, some easy things that he can do. It could be a fun family activity, you know, prior to bedtime. Everyone, you know, was kind of a relaxing thing. You put on some quiet music, do some stretching. You can even get some great yoga tapes.
Okay.
that are directed at kids. And that would be good general exercise. It's good postural control, and it's good mobility, and it can be relaxing before bedtime. And you might try that as just part of a ritual and see if that can help control his symptoms. But I don't hear anything that has me terribly concerned. He's been evaluated by his physician. So I just kind of keep tabs on it. But that's something that you might try to help minimize the symptoms or keep them from waking him up.
Nice thing for you to do, too, right at bedtime.
Excellent.
Exactly.
All right. Thanks
All
a lot
right.
for calling. An email from Bridget in Menasha. I'm the mother of a 3-year-old with special needs, she writes. He's unable to walk, so I am often picking him up and carrying him and or transitioning him from different seating devices throughout the day. In the past month, he had a growth spurt and now weighs 27 pounds at 3. I used to get occasional muscle pain on the right side of my back, but now it occurs almost daily. We also have a one-year-old who weighs about the same.
Oh.
I've started to do about 10 minutes of stretching each morning, which is helping. I plan to begin doing Pilates to strengthen my core. I've also seen a chiropractor but have stopped because she did not offer any additional ideas to stop the pain. Any other ideas? Obviously, I need to stay on top of this to properly care for my child.
Yeah, you bet. She's got to take care of her own back. And the kids just get bigger and more wiggly as a general rule. For the one-year-old, as the one-year-old becomes more mobile, ideally, when you're going to pick them up from the floor, if you need to get down to the floor on your knees, then put them up on the sofa or chair. You stand, and then you lift them from the chair. Once they can climb, you don't want kids climbing over furniture, but if they can climb onto a chair and you pick them up from the chair, that puts less stress on your back. And then when you put them down, if you can put them down on, again, some intermediate surface like a sofa or a chair, let them climb down to the floor from that, that can help a little bit. The child with special needs and the different seating arrangements, the more someone can use their legs and along with getting their back stronger, that will help relieve some of the stress from the back. Generally, the bending forward, if you can follow that with just standing up straight and put your hands on the back of your hips and gently arch backward, just moves your back in the opposite direction of the lifting maneuvers. But the Pilates would be a really, really good idea. And if the pain seems to be getting worse, even, you know, a visit to a therapist, and bringing maybe the children along, the therapist could work and teach somebody some specific strategies of how to minimize the stress on that back.
And if she's noticing symptoms on one side, it makes me wonder if she has a habit of lifting in a certain way, right, that if she could think about how she's lifting and kind of just do a little assessment as she's doing it and see if her weight is equally distributed on both feet, if her back's symmetrical, if her shoulders are symmetrical, she's lifting and taking that child close to her body. If there's something in the way she's lifting that's stressing one side of her body over the other.
Yeah, that's good. And also, if she's carrying a child, oftentimes it's easy just to carry on one hip.
Yeah.
And if that's kind of the habitual place where she carries her kids, then trying to get the kids on the other hip once in a while would also help with that, too.
Okay. And thank you, Bridget, and good luck to you. Appreciate your email. Mike in Medford's up next with a question. Mike, hello.
Hello there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I heard the lady that got hit by the car. I feel her pain. Years ago, I was hit by a drunken driver in the street, and besides having a neck fusion at C5-6, and now with the residual effects over the years, three subluxations in a thoracic vertebrae, it's getting to the point where C all the way through the cervical spine is getting foraminal stenosis, and above and below where I had the neck fusion, the bones are wearing out besides other protrusions in the spine. And I had two surgeries on the left knee, and most of my meniscus is gone. I was just wondering what other exercises I could do besides swimming is very helpful in the summer because it's less resistance. But everything's getting numb on the left side of my spine, and my arm is getting like some little paralysis. And besides, I don't particularly like doing medication. And I was just wondering what other exercise I could do to relieve this stress because I'm getting crescences and foraminal stenosis and most of my nerve opening there. Mm-hmm.
And again, stenosis just means narrowing, so there's less space for the nerves, and that can go along with some of the degenerative change that you're describing, Mike. The numbness and the paralysis, I'm assuming you're working with your physician or you're seeing your physician periodically to have that evaluated. Is that true?
Yes, I was in therapy, and they were doing tractions on pulling my spine, my neck out a little bit. That helped for a couple hours, but when everything settled back in, it just got the same old thing.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, as long as that numbness and paralysis is not progressing, and just make sure that your physician follows that. And having said that, exercise-wise, you mentioned swimming, especially in the summer, is good. If you have access to a pool...
Swimming is good.
Yeah. Well, and besides swimming, there's other things you can do besides swimming, and there can be some specific exercise you can do in the water in addition to the lap swimming that can be very good for flexibility and strengthening. And with all the things you mentioned, including your knee, the water seems to be the best place for you to do your most intense activity. But there are strengthening and stabilization exercises for shoulders and mid-back that can indirectly help your neck.
I do some walking as much as I can tolerate. I do a lot of TheraTube.
Yep.
And different strengths of the tube and range of motion exercises, and besides doing my stretching and everything else, which seems to help, but the pain is consistently there.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing, if the traction gave you temporary relief, has anybody set you up with a home neck traction unit?
Yeah, I tried that for a while, but that doesn't help much either.
All right.
Okay.
Okay, well, there's different kinds of home traction units. There's probably a half a dozen. Some are over the door and some...
Yeah, I had one over the door.
Yeah, well, there are better ones when you're lying on your back, actually. So that may be something to consider, even to give you some short-term relief that, again, may allow you to be a little more active. But, again, I would consider the pool where you could probably do your most intense therapy, your most intense mm-hmm. exercise, at least that being part of your workout program.
Good luck. Thank you very much for your call. An email from Phil is a follow-up to the woman who got hit at 40 miles per hour and stiffened up when she saw the other vehicle approaching. What could be done in that situation when we see a vehicle is going to hit you? And this time of the year, we probably have even more opportunity with it sliding around, slipping and sliding cars and so forth. He wonders, what position should you assume? Do you try and relax and rely on the airbag, or do you lay down on the seat? Ideally, you already have your seatbelt on. Mm-hmm. Is there any...
It's funny because as she was talking about what happened to her, I was visualizing that in my head and asking myself if that's the right thing to do. And I have to say, I don't have the answer to it. Part of me says stiffening up the muscles is going to be helpful to protect the joints. But, you know, you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. So the muscles have now taken the brunt of the force. I guess I would say I would stiffen and then try to relax into it as you're hit so that you're not holding yourself stiff the whole time, trying to hold but let your joints move some so some of the force is dissipated and not completely held by the muscles, although this is pure theorizing on my part.
Yeah, I've not read anything. There might be some trauma experts out there who maybe have some information, but instinctively, you stiffen up,
you're
you tighten up.
Up,
you grab yeah. on, mm-hmm. and what that can do, it can prevent you from hitting a steering mm-hmm. wheel or maybe mm-hmm. windshield if you don't have mm-hmm. airbags. And so that minimizes, you know, head trauma type of things. But when the soft tissues are contracted like that and the impact, there's going to be an injury to soft tissue. And I'm not sure what the ad Lori said.
Yeah.
All right, then let's go to Sherry in La Crosse. Sherry, hi to you.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a weird situation last weekend. I knelt down on the floor, and I felt a sudden, like a tearing feeling. And the pain was on the outer left edge of my kneecap, my left leg kneecap. And the pain only happens when I actually kneel down. I can bend my knee as much as I want. I can walk okay. I'm not having pain otherwise, only when I put weight on my knee in a kneeling position. I'm wondering, am I thinking of surgery here, or is this something that could heal with time?
No, it hurts when you kneel on it, but no other time?
Right.
Okay. What happens when you kneel directly on your kneecap is you compress the kneecap down on the underlying bone. So you're pressing basically cartilage to cartilage. Mm-hmm. And the outside, your kneecap tends, in the majority of people, to be tipped slightly to the outside. So you tend to get more compression there. It's called a lateral compression syndrome. So already that side of your kneecap tends to be the most vulnerable. So that when you kneel right on it, you probably... crunched up a little, to use a scientific term, your joint surfaces, and you may have roughed them up or aggravated or irritated them. There's also a number of ligaments that attached there that control the movement of your kneecap. So you may have irritated those at the attachment. It is not a surgical case at all. What I would focus on if I were you is stretching my quadriceps. If you're sitting, also, if you're sitting with your legs straight out in front of you, I would take that kneecap and try to slide it slightly to the inside and tip it the inside so that you tip the lateral side up a little bit to unload that that outside of your kneecap and do a little bit of stretching of some of those tissues that are underneath there, putting some ice on it. And you should recover from this. Strengthening your quadriceps. But keep in mind that if you fall and you land on your kneecap in the snow, that's a bad thing. It's a bad thing. So,
be careful.
So be careful.
And thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Christine and Madison, hi.
Hi there. How are you?
Good.
Good. Hey, I have not been getting I had an ACL reconstruction surgery done about a year and a half ago and still haven't really had fully recovered, and someone suggested that I go to a manual or manipulative physical therapist instead of a traditional physical therapist. They had very much success with that. I'm wondering if you could tell me the difference between the two.
All right, Bill?
Well, manual therapy means using, you know, deep soft tissue, deep massage techniques, and also some joint stretching, mobilization, or manipulation. All physical therapists have some training in that to a degree, but there are some specialists who have received extensive training in those kinds of techniques. And there's definitely some merit. 18 months out, especially if there's limitations of movement, yet that's where a manual therapist specialist might be able to help you, and then combine that with your exercise program. If you call a clinic, you can ask if there's a manual therapist specialist on staff. And, you know, most clinics out there, outpatient orthopedics, have somebody who have more extensive training. If you have trouble finding such a practitioner, if you want to leave your email address or contact information, I can help find somebody for you.
Okay, that would be great. Yeah, because I only found one company currently in Madison, that's AMPT, and I called the UW system and a couple other systems, GHC, and they didn't have anybody on staff. So
okay.
I thought it would be easier to try to find somebody.
Well, yeah.
It shouldn't be so difficult to find one. But as Bill said, most physical therapists have those skills in their repertoire. But it's trying to find somebody who has that expertise. And in all cases, it's a matter of matching the right skill set to what the patient needs. So depending upon what kind of problems you're still having, as Bill said, if you're having limitations in motion or mobility, that would be a good issue for a manual therapist. If you're lacking strength and agility and dynamic control, then a traditional sports physical therapist would be the way to go.
Okay. Tell you what, we will put you on hold, and Jim can get some information, and then mm-hmm. Bill will get mm-hmm. back to you. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And thanks to everybody who called in and all the emails and calls that are still here. Unfortunately, we are out of time.
It flew by today.
Flew by.
Indeed.
Yeah, lots of good questions and painful ones.
But
you guys will be back on January 12th.
Yes,
indeed.
That's correct. New
indeed.
Year.
New year.
2009.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Where'd it go? Where'd 2008 go?
Exactly.
I think it was a presidential race.
Yeah, maybe that was it. I don't know.
That was 2 years, by the way. It was one.
So we've aged 2 years
yes,
now?
Yes, we have. Yeah.
Oh, man. Lori Tyne Brody is a senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center. And Bill Boisenault, associate professor in the UW Medical School. And thanks. They'll be back January 12th. Tomorrow, Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the UW Veterinary Medical School will be with us to talk about your pet's health. Stay with us on the Ideas Net.